Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay, and tonight we will be dealing with Moorish culture, structure, and our story, and much, much more. Tonight's live guest is Dr. Aleem and Kadira El Bay. They'll be with us tonight, and we're going to cover a whole lot of information this evening, try to drop as much as we can in a two-hour span. What does the word indigenous really mean? What about the esoteric and metaphysical side of the Moors? What is the true meaning of the word Moor? What part does land play in conjunction to the word Moor? What are the true sciences of the Moor? Who were the ancient Moabites? How important is ethnology for the Moors? And what should all Moors be doing in America today for survival? We're going to try to touch on these things and try to get as much information out to you as we possibly can. But before we begin, I want to say that we are offering our free articles as usual, the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game. And I want you all to know that today, for those of you who have my archives, we put into the archives today about, I would say, 17 videos. In there, we dealt with the Moorish American Health. You will find it under Moorish American Health, and you will find it under Dr. Amos Wilson. These materials have been added there, and there's much, much more that will be coming in before the week's end. But this is what has been put there today. It's there. It's available. It's been published. So go into your archives, and you can let your children start getting this information under their belt as well. You can also start looking at the actual videos of how to set up your hydroponics and aquaponics systems in your community. Also, for those of you who do not have the most comprehensive library in America, contact me, Tahaka Amana El Bay, at area code 904-303-9061. Go to TahakaArchives.com. I'll place this information into the chat room. I'll be placing there more than once so that we'll get this. And once you get there and you get in there, then call me for whatever the immediate problems that you have, and I can direct you and guide you up in there, because if you just go in there by yourself, you're going to be lost, because the information is overwhelming. There's tons and tons of information available there for people of African descent and Moorish descent there for us. This is ours. And the way to access it again is go to TahakaArchives.com. And when you do that, contact me personally, 904-303-9061 for coaching and guidance. I don't think it gets no better than that. Okay? So let's go ahead and open up the line and get our guests in here because we don't have 2 hours and we got to rock and roll. So I'm going to, well, first of all, let's deal with this thing right here first. You know, just hold on a minute, then we'll get.
Salad greens and fish go very well together.
Hold on a minute.
And they grow very well together too. Arugula watercress.
All right, hold on. Oh, y'all. Area code 252. Dr. Aleem in Kadara Bay.
Yes, we here. Peace.
Peace, peace, peace. I don't hear the queen. Where she at?
Oh, she
right here.
Oh, okay. All right. I hear her now. Brother, before we get started with this thing, could you tell us how to get in touch with you, how to get a hold of your products, how to go to your website, all of that information?
Yes, you can reach us at 252-257-3588. That's 252-257-3588. And that's between the hours of 11 to 7 o'clock at night. And sometimes we'll take it even after that. So just give us a call and see what happens. But you can also get us at our website, www.draalimelbay.com. That's DraalimElbey.com. And all our products are listed there, as well as also the up and coming cruise to Mexico, to the pyramids, Cozumel, as well as also to Chichen Itza. And you can definitely get in contact with us about that, or either go to the website and go to calendar and up and coming events.
Okay. All right. Now, that email address one more time.
Is www.draalimelbey.com. That's DraalimElbey.com. And our email address is royalhouse777@gmail.com. That's RoyalHouse777, the numeral 777@gmail.com. That's 3 7s.
Okay, fantastic. Now, before we get started, Dr. Bay, what is out of, and I know this is going to be a tough one for you, out of all the products you offer, in your opinion, what is the most effective and beneficial product that you have to benefit the Moors?
It would be for health, hydrogen peroxide, 8% food grade, in which that destroys worms, parasites, viruses, and bacteria. So it's good for cancer, diabetes, HIV, AIDS, as well as also a host of many other diseases or ailments and sicknesses. So that's for health. As far as for mental health and conditioning would be my book, The First World Order.
Okay. And now that book is, what's the title of it again?
The First World Order.
First World Order. Okay, and they can purchase that right at your website.
Yes, they can.
Okay, all right. All right, now, this is what, because see, I know you can handle this. This word more, how does that work in conjunction with land? Because
right.
That's very, very interesting.
Yeah, it is very interesting because as we begin to start going through our research, and if anyone wants to find out more, they will go to the Black's Law Dictionary, the 4th Deluxe Edition, and look up land. And it says, in the most general sense, comprehends as any ground, soil, or earth whatsoever, as fields, meadows, pastures, woods, and moors. Waters, marshes, forest, and heath. So inside the definition of land is the word moors, M-O-O-R-S. So that means the word moors and land are synonymous. And, of course, land is the foundation of nationality, and the name moor symbolizes the birthright tie or heritage to land. All right. So in international law, Negroes, black, coloreds in the said United States of America are listed as stateless, i.e. landless. So when you tie yourself back to the word more, it instantly gives you land ties, which is your birthright and your heritage. So that means, being that we are the oldest indigenous people on the planet, any place in which that we walk and we set our residence is ours, which hence is the whole planet Earth, 6 sextillion tons.
Okay, now, put that down in the lowest denominational term, what would that mean to the brothers and sisters today? What is the basic part of that that we need to understand? And the brothers and sisters who I know none of them ain't out there. They might just have a third grade education.
Well, simply put, there's a difference between a natural person, which is indigenous, and an artificial person, which is distinguished from a natural person. An artificial person would be considered, i.e., incorporation, or some type of other artificial entity or legal fiction at law.
Okay, so when you say a law in conjunction with mortgage and land and stuff, how have the United States of America handled that thing?
Well, we know that the United States itself is a corporation. The 40-mile radius of Washington, D.C., District of Columbia, is a federalized zone in which that is nothing more than a corporation. United States is of America. America is not of the United States. So that means that one has a superior position, i.e., America. We are the original Americans. If you go by the definition, you will find out, based on, I think, is Webster's dictionary, you can actually go there and you can find, and I think it's Webster Universal Dictionary, 1936 and 1937, when it speaks about who are American, and it tells you that they are the original or aboriginal colored natives who was here prior to the invasion of their territory by the Europeans.
Okay, now wait a minute now.
That is in
so
the
go ahead.
I'm saying that is in the definition of the real Americans, the original Americans.
Okay. Well, now that will present a problem because the books in history, in the schools and colleges and universities, they say that Christopher Columbus discovered America. They say that the natives of the land is the Indians. Can you shed some light on that?
Yeah, well, based on my college experience, I had a doctor, a professor, a teacher by the name of Dr. Stokes. And Dr. Stokes played for us in sociology class, because that's what I have my degree in. He played for us in class how sociologists at the turn of the century of the 1900s, actually, those who was considered Chinese, they was reclassified to being Indians. So that means by the time of the TV, by the 1950s, 60s, 70s, we were seeing actually images of Chinese, not of the actual Native Americans, who was, i.e. us, especially those in the South, the Eastern Seaboard, and the Great Lake area, and into California. All of those people at that time were dark-skinned, or what is known as aboriginal or original natives, or one of the various copper-colored natives found on the American continent by the descent of European settlers. And we know that in kindergarten, we was taught that the Europeans were the invaders. So they are really the only aliens, not the Mexicans.
Wow. Now that's some heavy information. Now, before we go on, is the Queen ready to get on here and do some talking?
Yes, she is. She's right here.
All right. Come on in, Queen. Where you at?
I'm right here, God. Peace.
Peace, sister. All right. Now, I know if you over there with him, then you know what he know. What about the fact that every continent begins and ends with the alphabet A?
Well,
and
basically,
where did you come from?
Basically, the Caucasians, the Europeans, they inserted themselves in our story. You see, history, my story, the mysteries, which is our ancient ancestry. And you're right, I'm not sitting here for 13 years, not sitting here listening.
Okay.
No, a little bit. It's just, it's so much to know, Brother Tahaka.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now, if all the continents begin with the alphabet A and
you
end
said,
with
you
the
know,
alphabet
Europe
A.
begins with an E, and every other continent has an A. And it begins with an, it ends with an E and begins with an E versus beginning with an A and beginning with an A like the other continents do. So, you know, they just inserted themselves, basically, trying to have a culture.
Okay.
No matter who it comes from, they take it. So that's just what the pattern has been.
I hear you. Okay, mm-hmm. now, if all continents begin with an A, and end with A, I'm trying to figure out what happened with Europe. Europe have to be, because we know we had Asia and all of that, so Europe would have to be in there some kind of way.
I know the generational teaching that I received was it was called Eurasia. Eurasia.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember that, but that's what it was called. So, again, inserting themselves. Why? What's your perspective, Brother Tahaka?
Well, the way I see it is, I always try to reduce things all the way down to the lowest denomination. Stanley Lane Poole says that the as early as the 10th century, the Moors had built the greatest civilizations on the planet. Now, if we just start right there, not even going backwards, just right there, and during that same time, there were no colleges and universities in Europe. Europeans could neither read or write. They did not allow the masses to have access to the educational portion of things, the castles and stuff that's being shown to us on television and the titles that being attached to these castles and all of this stuff, these people were not in there. So just like you said, they have attached themselves to an already existing history. And if they couldn't read or write just as early as yesterday, so how is it possible that I should go along with anything they got to say about history when they just learned how to read and write yesterday? So everything to me is questionable.
You're right. Learn how to cook their food. That's why everything is raw. Just learn how to bury their dead. They use currency as teeth. You know, truly cavemen.
Oh, okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want to beat them up too bad. Just.
Oh, no, we don't hate them. We don't hate them.
No.
But the perspective of the story, you know, it is what it is. I mean, the Geico commercial, it shows the caveman vibration. So, no, just the Ice Age message to the white man and white woman. No, and these are written by Caucasian authors. So, no, not beating them up. Because they are, I mean, they own Blog Talk, you know. You know,
all right.
But us knowledge and our story sometimes is associated with hatred, and that's not how it is. Everybody else can love and acknowledge their forefathers and foremothers, and you know, and it's not looked at as negative because we're supposed to just acknowledge their forefathers and foremothers, you know, and not our own, you know. So that's why I'm so grateful that we're working to change that.
Okay, fantastic,
mm-hmm.
Fantastic. All right, now. I'm going to come back to you,
okay.
But I want to talk to the king one more time.
Yes.
All right, Dr. Lean.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a breakdown on who the ancient Moabites were.
Well, it depends if you talk about it from a biblical perspective. you know, if we are, then that would be something in which that is metaphysical in nature.
Okay.
And what we mean by metaphysical, that is talking about that it has a spiritual underlying and meaning. In other words, it's more so esoteric in interpretation. All right? For example, the word Moabite, from its esoteric perspective, would be that the word Moab represents the body or materialism or materiality, and that the most external condition of life.
You know?
And basically, from that perspective, we see that Ruth was a Moabitess, you know, so hence, she symbolized the spirit coming into the body, or the spirit becoming the physical body, you know, hence the lineage, the genealogy, in which that later on you see Jesus is part of. So from that perspective, you know, we see what the word Moabite or Moab actually symbolizes. It also symbolizes the carnal mind as it pertains to the soul of man. You know, because Ruth, the Moabite, actually symbolizes or signifies human love that rose to the divine because of his willingness to leave the love of the unreal or what appears to be intangible to become tangible. You know, so that's the metaphysical thought about that. And anyone who want to find out more, they can go to the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary by Charles Fillmore, and he breaks down the word Moab extensively and how that symbolizes coming from the invisible to the visible plane or the immaterial to the material plane. Now,
okay.
About historically, then we're talking about basically the Elder Morvid. Almoravid, they are actually the Moabites, in which that they had the capital of Marrakesh, you know, in which that we now refer to as Morocco. You know, we know that Morocco was much larger than what it is referred to nowadays. Of course, it encompassed Mauritania as well as also Morocco, stretching on into Put, which is now also known as Libya. So the Almoravid, you know, i.e. also called the Berbers, were Kushites. You know, they came from out of the Kushite Empire, you know, known as Ethiopia today, or Somalia in the Sudan. You know, and they formed the empire in the West, or the Western African region, around the 11th century that stretched over the Western Maghreb and Al-Andalus, what is known as Morocco, Mauritania, Ghana, Mali, Niger, parts of Nigeria, and Senegal. So that's the historical perspective behind the word Moabite.
Okay, now, if that's true, then we have a problem because in all the history books, they said that somebody else was over there, and we don't find anything. I don't see anything inside the United States being taught about the African Moors, and certainly not about the conquering of Spain and all of that stuff there.
Exactly.
And so, I wonder why you think that's so.
Well, that's because books such as Othello's Children in the New World, Moorish History and Identity of the African-American Experience, written by Jose Pimenta Bay, who is a PhD, is not taught within high schools or colleges, you know, and, you know, neither is books, you know, such as by Romani Almanu Hill, the former National Grand Sheik of the MSTA, from out of Baltimore, Maryland, his book, Negro Blacks the Moor. Neither is Elihu Pleasant Bay's book, Exhuming of a Nation, biography of Noble Drew Ali. You know, neither is my book, The First World Order. So none of these books in which that is based on African and the Moorish lineage and heritage is taught in these high schools nor in these colleges. So therefore, they do not want the masses to know about their Moorish lineage or ties. because they know that the Moors were the seafarers. They were the navigators and the masters of the seven seas, as well as also of the seven continents. Because on each continent, you would see that from out of the Moorish experience, or the so-called African experience, you would see the royal lineage within each continent coming and stemming from Africans, you know, or Moors. And when you go to Egypt, you see the word Moor, Amaur, M-A-U-R, to become M-O-O-R, and they was the priests, the high priest of the order of Anu, which is Amen, Amen-Ra. So it was the craft of Amen-Ra, in which that extended throughout the world, in which that produced the pyramids and the mounds, in which that we see, and therefore, they do not want you to know of your heritage because that would mean that you are the original architects. All the glory in which that you would see in Cordova, all the glory you would see in Granada and throughout Spain and Portugal and et cetera, throughout Europe, all the castles in which that was built. We see that the oldest castle is actually in Ethiopia, which is Kushitic. You know, they're Kushites. And so, therefore, we know that based on what Prophet Nobudrali teaches us was when within the Moorish Holy Temple of Science / the Moorish Science Temple of America and the umbrella, what is known as the Moorish National and Divine Movement, that we are taught that we come from old man Kush. And so therefore, this is where this information comes from in which that went throughout the world. And of course, Prophet Nobudrali say he came to reveal that which was hidden of the secret societies. And so the secret societies, this information was in the Orient, in India, in Europe. And so he came to reveal that information because it was hidden in Freemasonry. It was hidden in the Rosicrucians. It was hidden in these so-called secret societies, or what is now referred to as the Illuminati. And now he revealed that to us 100 years ago, you know. And therefore, we give him acknowledgments for that because that is something on which that was never done on that scale or on that level, you know. So when you read Othello's Children in the New World, he even goes on to say that even though the land of Moab was in Asia, the term Moabiterum was actually used by medieval European. The Catholic Hispanic Iberians used the term Moabeta, all right, as a synonym for the 11th century African Islamic dynasty of Almoravid, all right, or Almoravid. And it says the French author M. Chalmers goes on to say that the Tafelin was one of the first sovereigns known as the race of the Moabitum, or more commonly called Moabites. According to Prophet Nobudrali, he states that the Moorish Americans were descendants from the ancient Moabites, who were the ancient Berbers, or Barbar, which means Ethiopians, because that's what they referred to themselves as when they were referred to in history, also as Kushites of the northwest and southwest Africa. You know, so the historical sources also confirm that the Almoravids specifically were indeed Moabites. So in etymology, the term Berber is the second definition of a Moor.
Okay. Now, the way I see this right here is if truth will set you free,
mm-hmm.
and none of it is being circulated in the system that's designed to make you aware, called educational system, then that means somebody don't want you free.
No doubt about it. Well, you know, that's always was something on which that was said. That was a little unknown joke amongst Europeans or white folks. Al Piance, in which that stated that if you can put it in a book in reference to us, you know, you can put $1 million in a book and it would still be there because we would never read the book, you know. So it was always known that that's where, even they say the libraries, where the lies are buried at. So we don't think that any of these words are used just coincidentally, you know, it is definitely in order to see how well we become scholars, you know, and how much we come back into knowledge of self. I think that is actually the ploy in which that is, even Eddie Murphy showed within the movie. I think it was known as, the rendition from Off Coming to America, but it was the one before that. I think it was called Trading Places. And
okay.
It showed how, you know, they had a bet, these billionaires, you know, had a dollar bet in order to see how much we would actually research and study and come back into knowledge of self, especially dealing with the economic situation. And as you see on there, we end up winning the bet. So that is what's going on. Right now, the Masonic Shriners are trying to see, these white Masonic, Alpian Masonic Shriners are trying to see if we actually will come back into knowledge of self. And if so, they will have to put up barriers and roadblocks in order to keep us at bay until they continue to try to figure out in the formation of their so-called New World Order. And that was even proposed within Carol Quigley's book. I can't remember the name of it right now, but I think it was called Tragedy and Hope, you know, something like that, in which that he stated in there that the only way in which that the New World Order would not be formed is if the urban said blacks wake up, you know. So that was a reference to the rise of the Moors once again. So this is actually what, in some regards, they are afraid of. And so, therefore, this is probably some of the levels in which that, you know, they're trying to operate from. Because I know that when we went to England, my wife and I, we went to the United Grand Lodge of England, and the curator of the museum portion of the United Grand Lodge came up to us and asked us, "Why do you feel about the possibilities of your first black president?" And, you know, we smiled, you know, because we knew he wasn't the first. But my wife turned around and spilled the beans on him and said, "Well, there was more than nine prior to him." And he jumped back like someone hit him, you know, in shock and amazement, and said, "Who told you that? You're not supposed to know that. Did they tell you that?"
Uh-huh.
So we know that there is a conscious effort on their part for us not to know. So what is our duty? Is to know.
There you go. Well, this is where I see it, and I pay close attention. I know for a fact that we are the biggest job producers on the planet, but I only want to deal with right here in the United States. We provide more jobs for anybody and everybody on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Our communities are filled with foreigners. They even have stores dedicated to selling products that only we buy and consume.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now if we, because I can stand outside at one of these facilities and watch and count how many people go in the store to buy here.
Right.
All right. And the only people I see is ones that look like me.
Right.
So that tells me that these people are living off of me.
No doubt about it.
All the employees in their store are able to have a job because of me.
Right.
If I go to a restaurant, an Asian restaurant, I look in the back and I only see Asian employees.
Right.
But out in the foyer where the people are purchasing the food, everybody that's purchasing the food, don't none of these people look like them. So once again, that tells me that we are the ones responsible for their livelihood. I go to our restaurants, and there's a small amount of people, but I never see any Asians lined up to buy anything from us.
That's true.
So that tells me there's something wrong. So I want these broadcasts so we can make this known. I can't get it out of college. I can't get it out of universities. I can't get it out of junior high school, elementary school. So what I did is create a school for myself. But one way or another, we're going to get the job done. Now, let's go on to the other information here so we can tell some more truth.
All right.
Now, before I start, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who have questions and comments, go ahead and raise your hand, and I will recognize your hand, and then we can get you in if you got a question or a comment. Now's the time to go ahead and do that as we proceed down through this thing. Now, my next question is, you mentioned etymology and the words and the stuff of this nature. How important is it for Moors to understand etymology, and what is etymology?
Well, that's the branch of linguistics. And if you're going to say that we speak English, no matter how devilish this language is, as most people say, then it would be imperative that we understand the etymology of the words in which that we speak, the science of antonyms and synonyms and homonyms and so forth and so on, as well as also the utilization of the word place, because we know, you know, there's a lot of wordplay and a lot of technology involved in this language. We know there's many meanings to similar sounding words, you know, and you would have to think consciously on which way that the word is being utilized based on the structure of the sentence. So why wouldn't it be important for us to know the etymology of these particular words? You know, it just doesn't make sense. That is part of linguistics and part of scholarship.
Okay. Now, I got a caller with his hand raised, so I'm going to open up this line here. Area code 313, could you tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what's your question or comment?
Hello. Greetings. Brother Taharka and Dr. Eileen Bay, I'd like to say greetings. I appreciate everything, the work y'all doing.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Indeed. And in fact, I like to say, Brother Eileen, you know, I have had my head cracked several times by looking at your DVDs and my head being cracked by listening to Brother Taharka. But I do have two comments and I have one question. The two comments, first I want to comment on what Taharka was talking about as far as Koreans and everything. In Detroit, Michigan, we have, you know, a lot of liquor stores and gas stations owned by Chaldeans for the most part, right, or Arabs.
Right.
And, you know, in commerce, you know, to be a community, you have to own your commerce to be a real community. And the sad thing is that I hate to see that my young black sisters out here being molested, if you would say, because these guys, like, you know, we own the businesses and stuff like that, and some of my young sisters, they are not aware of what life is about, and they get taken advantage of, and brothers don't have them businesses to say, hey, you know, we're doing commerce, and, you know, we got our thing going on and everything, and that upsets me, you know, and that's what's been going on in Detroit for a long time, and I'm Chaldean, brother, they damn sure don't want you messing around with their women. There's going to be some problems if that happens. My second comment, also in Detroit, Michigan, this street called Mound Road and Outer Drive. And on Mound Road and Outer Drive, there's a very large hill. It's called Derby Hill. In my childhood, I rode down that hill several times with my bike. And, you know, never not realizing that because I wasn't cognizant of that. But now I realize, like, Mound Road, and you got a big old hill. And that's in Detroit, Michigan. Okay, my question is, Dr. Eileen Bay, I know you deal with a lot of knowledge dealing with masonry and stuff like that. I'm not going to lie, I was initiated, passed and raised as a Prince Hall Mason. I'm no longer affiliated with them. However, I would like to know, what is the significance with District of Columbia? Okay, it's between Virginia and Maryland, Virgin Mary, okay. You have Silas Symbols sitting up right there. From my understanding, Benjamin Banneker Bay, he did architecture that was supposed to be aligned with the constellation of Virgo. Of course, you know, you have your 3 degrees or 3 days, what have you. being raised by the strong hand of grip from with the lion's grip. That's Leo. That's the constellation of the sun. So, and C. Freeman L., he always say that these people, they using your information against you. So I want to know what it is that they're doing that we're not doing, and how can we get from underneath this, and how does that...
Right. Definitely, let me answer that, because that's a real simple answer to that question. The thing is that Prince Hall Masons, if you go through your research, you will find that a lot of those rituals was actually put together by Albert Pike.
Okay.
Now, you know who Albert Pike is? He's the founder of the KKK, Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So we're talking about rituals being used by so-called blacks, you know, from a white supremacist who formed the KKK. You know, and so that is the reason why we are using information on which that is detrimental to us. All right. Now, how do we come out from that? Well, do like what you did. No longer affiliate yourself with the Prince Hall, and you come into Masonry in which that is being taught properly, and that would be Moorish right Freemasonry, in which that deals with the Moorish perspective, in which that deals with your heritage, your lineage, your worldwide connections, you know? And so that's how you would come from up under that, in which that you have rituals in which that deals with your Moorish information and being a master of the seven seas, you know, being that perfected navigator of the Celestines, you know, what is known as celestial planes of existence as well. So not just of the earth, in which that you are more, in which that symbolizes land as well as waters, but also of the ethereal plane and the astral planes of existence. So we are the master navigators on all planes. So it's time for us to come back and see that information on which that has been hidden from us. And, of course, the oldest place with that would be ancient Egypt, in which that is the mouthpiece of Africa. Not that that is the only place in which that information exists at, because it's not, but is one of the last vestige of information in which that is still recorded. The handwriting is on the walls, as they say, in which that we can definitely go and do our own analytics and research and study.
Okay. Indeed. Yeah, that's very powerful,
brother.
Right there.
Did I answer your question, Brooke?
Yeah, I would like y'all to comment on just the one little geographical thing in Detroit, you know, having the big old hill and right beside you got Mound Road. You know, I always wondered about that, you know.
Well, actually,
I mean,
that is a mound in which that was built by the remnants of the Olmecs within this country, hence, i.e., your ancestors. That mound, my wife and I went there a few years ago. We went to
okay.
it, and actually it's in the shape of a phoenix.
Wow.
Right? And so
wow.
that class is also a constellation, you know, in which that deals with flight, the science of the soul, as well as also being that it is there in Detroit. We know that our people, you know, were situated up there near the Great Lake area, you know, and that we are the remnants of those particular Olmecs, you know, or, you know, so-called black folks, as they refer to us as. Of course, we know those are misnomers, so we would say the Ish or the She people. That's what was known as the She people. S-H-E is the sound, but it was actually spelled X-I. And thus, that was the name of the Olmecs prior to the word Olmecs being used, which means rubber people. The Ish people means power. That's what Ish means. It means power. It's the same word as we would say at the end of some prayers, when we say Ashe. So be it. So we're invoking power when we say it. So that's who we were. We was the invokers of the power of the pra, of what is known as the prana, or the chi, or the ki energy. And that's what we was utilizing in order to build with those particular structures, the mounds, the pyramids, what is known as the Tekkins, or the Tekkenos, and the Mir, or the Mirus, you know, as well as also the Bennu, you know, or the Beni, which means the mounds. The word Beni means mound, mound within the Metsunetsu. And, of course, we know that the Beni, what evolved from out of the mound of the Beni was the Benu bird, which was the phoenix. And it's no coincidence that it's right there within Detroit. Or Detroit.
Wow. Okay. Well, I hope that answered the brother's question. And, ladies and gentlemen, if you all have questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. Now is the time, and we can get as many of them answered as we possibly can. Dr. Aleem, I want to go on to the next question.
Okay.
And if you could explain this in detail for us, what are the true sciences of the Moors?
The same sciences in which that are taught in school. However, we do not fragment the teachings. We interlope them and interchange them. For example, we were the masters of alchemy, now called chemistry. We was the masters of physics, now in the field of what is called quantum physics, which actually is nothing more than metaphysics, which was known within ancient Egypt as being the school of Hakka. Hakka symbolizes the ancient mystery school of Tahuti. So we was the masters of that. We was the masters of geography, you know, dealing with land and waters, you know, the coordinates, you know, the artificial lines known as latitude and longitude, the ley lines, the earth grids. We was the masters of all of that. We understood that the earth was a living entity, and that just like our physical bodies, we had meridians and nodes and or nadis, as they was called, and chakra points. Well, the earth also have those same points, so we set up the mounds and the pyramids on those particular points. You know, so when cosmic energy comes in based on certain times of alignments of planets and constellations, then we will receive that energy fully in order to rejuvenate ourselves and revitalize and re-energize ourselves and take us to the next level of consciousness. We also understood mathematics, supreme mathematics, in which that dealt with the little science of what now is taught within school of algebra, fractions, of trigonometry, geometry, calculus, and et cetera. You know, you can also get from out of ancient Egypt what is known as the Rin Papyrus, in which that shows you the supreme mathematics that we was actually dealing with, or what is known as the Rhine Papyrus, R-I-R-H-I-N-E. That's how it was spelled. So the Rin or the Rhine Papyrus. And you can see the information that we was dealing with. I'm talking about school. I'm talking about child-level mathematics is what actually we were using today compared to the ancient Egyptians evolved mathematics, and they didn't do it with utilizing 2 to 10% of their brain. They used more than that, you know, and that's how they were able to build these pyramids and these mounds, by utilizing much more percentage of the brain. And how they were able to do that was by absorbing more cosmic energy, you know, and being conscious of it as they're doing it through each breath. So this is how you awaken your higher senses and your higher chakras, is by focusing and concentrating on God all the time, which is energy, you know, as well as we dealt with writing, in which that we knew that by writing, there was the science of casting spells. In other words, you can actually use writing in order to influence others, in order to think in a similar way, and hence act in a similar way. And if we get the 100 monkey theory, that if when one monkey cracks open a nut differently than all the other monkeys, all of a sudden all the other monkeys, the 99 other monkeys, got the exact same technology. It's called collective thinking. So we knew that by writing, we can actually tap into the collective thinking of others, hence influence what is known as the energies or the presence of the ethers, known as the Akashic Records or the Universal Library. So these are just the sciences in which that we use. Now we call it, you know, minimally reading, writing, and arithmetic, you know. But these are the sciences in which that we use this more in order to convey the messages and to continue building the ancient mystery schools around the world.
Okay, well, now, if that's true, I'm trying to figure out now what Europeans created and brought to the table as education.
Based on writings of Walter Scott in his book, Hermetica, it stated that the Egyptians said the worst thing they would have ever done was create man in our image and after our likeness. So, yes, they was created approximately 6,000 years ago, as Honorable Elijah Muhammad has told us within the message of the black man, as also within the adept chambers of the Moore Science Temple of America that has been leaked out for over 100 years, in which that we taught the same information. That information is found within the Rosicrucian teachings and Masonry at the higher levels. So, yes, this is definitely true. There's no doubt about it. There was a made man on this planet that did not come from natural sources, such as he did not come from as we did. In other words, I'll give you a good example. The Dogon say that we came from Sirius primarily first before we came and traveled the galaxy. As a matter of fact, the Amazulu people say that before we came to Earth, we resided on the red planet, which is referred to as Mars. So hence, on the Cydonia site, you would see a head of a man or face of a being, I should say, with pyramids and different other structures around it on Mars. You know, so we knew that there was life on the surface of Mars because there's structures on which that is still there in order to see. And the Amazulu people, which are the South African Bushmen, people were there. As a matter of fact, Kudu Mutar speaks about this in his lectures and talks with David Icke and others. So this is definitely real. However, as long as we know that we are just confined to this planet and under the subjugation of this Albion or this European, and as long as we feel hopeless and helpless, then I guess we continue staying in the state in which that we have become content to. I, for one, am not.
Okay. Well, I know that. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to make an announcement here. Saturday evening at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I'm going to be on the Tony Gill Show. And the call-in number for that, I'm going to put it in the chat room, is 347-884-9485. Now, Sunday evening, we got Brother Kamitiu Bay is going to be here. We're going to be discussing federal and civil procedure. Monday night, we'll have Abundance Chow on the network, and we'll be discussing a lot of very, very important information there. And then after that, we're going to have another young man that's going to come on Tuesday night, and we're going to be dealing with astronomy and astrology from a whole new different angle, so don't miss that. This is going to be Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, so make sure that you catch me on Tony Gill's show Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Block Talk Radio. Call in at 347-884-9485, and then everything else is going to be on Morris Talk Live 100 right here. Now, Dr. Aleem Bey, I want to get to my next question. And then we're going to go back with some more.
Right, I wanted to say this, too, is that you just mentioned another science, which is cosmology, with the astronomy and astrology. Of course, that was also one of the another branches in which we just finished talking about, in which that was utilized by the Moors greatly.
Okay, could you shed a little bit more light on that?
The fact is that they use the stars in order to gauge their influence upon the planet Earth, and the world is also to adjust future events. For example, you have in the Bible about the story of the three wise men or the magi, in which that came from out of nature, in which that studied a star, in which that star was actually Sirius, and they themselves, the three wise men, symbolized the three stars on Orion belt, in which that points to the star Sirius A, which is the brightest object in the sky next to Venus. So what happened is that in the biblical tale, it tells us that the three wise men found Jesus by following that particular star. So that means that Jesus symbolized the birth or the setting under that particular star, you know, known as Sirius A, in which that is the Sirius constellation, which is the dog star constellation, which that within ancient Egypt was known as Anpu or Anubis. So Jesus actually symbolized in that symbolism, Anpu or Anubis, in which that was known as being one of the sons of Osar. Now, of course, you know, his other counterpart would be that of Heru. So we have the story of Jesus actually being Heru, coming from the Egyptian mythology, or known as the Metuneter. So we know that that was also as above, so below, as within, so without. That's a supreme axiom. And that story symbolized the as above portion, but it also played out here below, you know. And it plays out within each and every one of us if we really pay attention to that story.
Okay. Well, now, I would like to say one more time, and I know this is quite riveting. If anybody else out there that have a question or comment, now's the time you raise your hand. If there's anybody out there that is of European descent, this is an opportunity for you to provide proof to refute the claims that are being put forth here tonight. Go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll open up the line so that you can present your evidence. Now, Dr. Aline Bey, I know about the embargo against Cuba back in the day, but we found out that Cuba made an announcement that they had discovered an underground, underwater city.
Right.
You familiar with that?
Yeah, BMO.
Okay, could you give us some insight into what was found there?
Right, off the coast of Cuba was the Benemy Island, in which that was known to have sunk beneath the ocean floor. It was actually one time part of the Great Hole of Atlantis, Ireland. Of course, it's the mainland Atlantis, which is actually from Virginia down into Georgia. That was actually part of the mainland, on the mainland of Atlantis. But in the Caribbean, we have the island of Atlantis, in which that actually is the Bahamas, Trinidad, Tobago, as well as Haiti and Barbados, as well as St. Thomas and different places, you know, as well as also Cuba. They was all connected at one time before this devastation, based on historical events and what has been written by many scholars. They say that was Atlantis. However, portion of it sank beneath an ocean floor. And so Cuba have found that off the coast is the Benemy Island, in which that was a portion of that, in which that they have found statues, carvings and statues, pyramids, other structures, walkways, and different things like that underneath the ocean floor.
Okay, now, the statue, what did it look like?
The statues look like us. There's no doubt about it. They look as science would say Negroid, you know. But they actually were the ancient Atlanteans, in which that, if you get the book on The Children of Mu, written by Church Ward, James Church Ward, and some of his books, right, he states in there that the original inhabitants of Lemuria and Atlantis were the Twa people, which, of course, they refer to as the Pygmies. And even Charles Ledbetter from the Theosophical Society of the Mount of Blavatsky stated the same thing. Wolf Anipasat stated the same thing, is that the Pygmies are the oldest people on the face of the planet, and that it was here in the Western Hemisphere dating back to 2 million years ago.
Okay. Well, now, I have been seeing photographs on the Internet of what was actually photographed under the waters after discovery.
Right.
And I have seen nobody but us.
Right.
So, and I noticed one consistent thing. Anytime there is something found that is ancient, is always referred to as a lost civilization or an ancient civilization, but there's no complete description of what was found of, with any type of physical resemblance to a man. Is there's buildings we'll see. There may be a rock, but there's, you know, nothing else to indicate who were there.
Right.
And it's always labeled as a lost civilization. But I also noticed that anytime we find something that is just old enough to be somebody that's not us, well, there's a clear description of everything. There's facial features, there's this, there's that, there's the other, and it's never classified as lost. It's never classified as ancient. It is amazing the control mechanism of cover up of our ancient truth in regards to the Moors. I have never heard the word Nobel Drew Ali ever mentioned in any school that I've ever been in my life.
Right.
And I can go into any school today, and I have yet to find it.
And you won't. And you barely get to hear the forerunner Marcus Garvey name mentioned.
No. We can't do that. Oh, good Lord, no. That's a bit much. We can't. Anyway, you're absolutely correct. Now, what I'm trying to do here now is I want to deal with the metaphysical side in regards to our ancient story. Could you shed some light on that?
Well, based on the most advanced information that we have, we would see that the term indigenous, when you go to the various definitions, for example, Webster's Seven New Collegiate Dictionary, and you look up the word indigenous, it says produced, grown, or living naturally in a particular region or environment, inborn or innate, and it says see native. But then when you go to the Black's Law Dictionary 7th edition, and it says natural person is indigenous, native, the original or natural inhabitants of a country. You know, so when we're looking at that, and us being the oldest people on the face of the planet, us being the oldest people on the planet would be a synonym, indigenous. It's the one and the same. So metaphysically, we have to look at what did indigenous people do or have, you know, as far as the United Nations Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People. It says that indigenous people have the right to revitalize, use, develop, and transmit to future generations their histories, languages, oral traditions, philosophies, writing systems, and literatures, and to designate and retain their own names for communities, places, and persons. So we have these particular sciences that we need to go back and research, you know, and like we bring it here tonight, the histories, you know, whether it's earthly or et cetera, whether it's the languages in which they're talking about linguistics, our oral traditions, you know, or whether we're talking about metaphysics, which is part of the philosophies, our writing system, as we spoke about, was one of the sciences of the Moors, and literature, in which that symbolizes the writing and the reading, you know, because the Moors, more than 90% of the Moors were literate. More than 98% of the Moors was literate, when less than 7% of Europe was literate during the so-called Dark Age or during the so-called Age of Enlightenment or what is known as the Renaissance. Because when they talk about the Renaissance, it's actually talking about the Moorish Renaissance, because the Moors are the ones who came into Spain and Portugal and the rest of Europe and brought enlightenment to the Europeans and civilized them. You know, so when we get into metaphysics, we're talking about not just the physical, but the mental, and what moved the people, what was their mental state at that particular time, in that particular period, why do they act the way they do? You know, in other words, it goes back to actually sociology and psychology. When we talk about psychology, it's talking about the study of the soul. You know, but nobody get ridiculed over the study of the soul, but yet they call themselves psychiatrists or psychologists. You know, but it's the study of the soul, something which that, you know, based on so-called science has not been yet proven as far as they're concerned, even though you can take a Curlian camera and actually look at the imprint around the human body and see that there's an aura or some type of light glow from the body. It's emitting a light from the body, and it's referred to as an aura, you know, within Latin. And we said the word aura means body of light, you know, a light body. So we know this to be the truth, and this is where metaphysics comes in at, is that it's the study beyond the physical, in which that deals just like within science today. When you take physics class, in order to go to advanced level of physics, it's called quantum physics, which means to leap or go beyond the physical once again. So only thing they did was take the word, they made metaphysics pseudoscience, but then established a so-called science after it, or pattern of science after it, known as quantum physics. So now, you know, you got Japanese scientists born, you know, here in America, known as Michio Kaku, who's one of the top physicists or one of the top quantum physicists today, and he can come and say and talk about 2012, talking about the solar flare activity and so forth and so on, you know, and he get respected. You know, so this is the nonsense behind what is being perpetrated behind those who study metaphysics, you know, as compared to those who, you know, to go into other pursuits, you know. So when you're talking about metaphysics, you're actually talking about psychology of a people. You're also talking about the quantum physics within our everyday life. That's actually what you're talking about. So,
Okay, now, we need to hold on 1 second, and I'm going to come right back. Just hold on, brother.
Be sure to subscribe to NBTV at NBTV1.com. The show that cares.
Now, here's my question. If everything that we have said tonight is true, what is it under the sun from here all the way back in ancient times that anybody besides us has brought to the table that is brand new and has never been done before?
There's nothing new under the sun. So there's nothing in which that humanity can actually do in any day and time or any age in which that has not been done at one point of time in history. Based on the book Forbidden Archaeology, The Hidden History of the Human Race, Michael Creedmore and Richard L. Thompson speak about the fact that in South Africa there was metallic orbs in which that was found in a blasting site in South Africa, in which that dated back to 2.8 billion years ago. Billion, not million. So humanity has been on this planet over nearly, at least, as far as being able to smelt metal, nearly 3 billion years. Now, the Earth is only 4.5 billion, so that means that more than likely we existed at the same time as the Earth was being formed. And our theory was stating as it condensed and became hardened, we also became condensed and hardened. All right? That is just the gist of the matter. There's nothing in which that can be said, you know, to disprove that. You know, we know that humanity have been here that long, and as well as the fact that not only have we been here that long, but there's nothing new, as we said, under the sun.
Well, I'm going to defend this European as best I can, because we had the Wright brothers. And they brought out airplanes. Certainly, that was never had, wasn't none of that ever have happened no kind of way before.
Well, that's not true, because in India they had the Vramana, in which that was planes, in which they speak within the Vedic texts of the Mahabharata, as well as also within the other Vedic texts of flying crafts. You know, within the Sumerian text or the Enuma Elish, they speak about flying crafts. Within ancient Kemet, they are found within the tombs. A matter of fact, in the tomb of, I believe it was Seti I, they found an airplane on which that was in the shape of a bird. But the way that it was structured, it actually you can actually fly it. You know, so actually that was one of the first airplanes, or one of the oldest airplanes in which that they have found, in which that dated back to over 4,000 years ago. So, no, there's nothing in which that we have done. Matter of fact, even Leonardo da Vinci had diagrams of planes and aircrafts dating back in the 1600s. And that was 300 years prior to the Wright brothers. So, no, man has always had a fascination with flying and have done so on many occasions throughout the ages.
Okay, I lose again. Well, I ain't giving up. We have the United States of America government. Nothing like this ever existed before. What do you say to that?
Amazing. All right, well, number one, the United States is not a government. Based on the title codes, or the United States title codes, it actually states itself as nothing more than a corporation. So it's not even a government, all right? So the United States is a corporation, all right? What is known as a de facto government is not a de jure government, which means a true government. A matter of fact, at the United Nations, the United States is listed as an NGO, which is a non-governmental organization. So it is not a government, and nor is it organized. It's a crime, that is. You know, so in that regard, we know that the basis of what has become the tenets of the United States Constitution, or what is known as the Constitution for the United States, which that became the Constitution of the United States, which that became the United States Constitution, came from originally from the Iroquois Confederation, from the peace, the Treaty of Peace treaty, in which that they had amongst the indigenous people, amongst the various Native Americans. Known as the Seneca, known as the Cherokee, and various other Iroquois members of that particular Confederacy. And Thomas Jefferson, as well as also Benjamin Franklin, went in and learned up under them the structure of government, and they brought that structure back in order to form it within Pennsylvania, which was Philadelphia, and it was named after William Penn, who actually had a lease with the Lenape, who actually was part of that Iroquois Confederation, as well as also Benjamin Banneker, was actually a prince from out of that particular, who was known as Ben Bay Emmanuel Moali, was actually a prince from out of that tribe of the Lenape, known as the Delaware Moors. You know, so we know that destruction of this government, you know, or what became destruction of the government, the republic, that is, not the de facto democratic system in that we see now, which means the word democracy means ruled by demons, from the word demos krati, or kratzi, which means ruled by demons, or a mob rule. But in the original Republican form, because the Constitution only speaks that there's only one form of government, which is the Republican, and since this is no longer a Republican form of government, and it's become a democracy, then it is not even a government. Once again, it's de facto. Now, that means that the governmental tenets in which they tell us came from Rome. But we know that the Romans got their government set up from the Greeks. And we know that the Greeks got their set up from the ancient Egyptians. Okay? And so we know that this is actually the origin of their governmental structure. It's from, once again, out of ancient Egypt. And we know this to be the truth because we know that the so-called Greek philosophers went into Egypt or Africa and learned and studied up under the priesthood and got information in which that they took back, you know, and actually they wasn't Greeks as we would think. They actually was the Minoans, who were the original Grecians, because that actually was the Minoans' land prior to them becoming known as the Greeks. And in Rome, they was known as the Etruscans. And both of these groups, the Minoans, Minoans and the Etruscans, once again, was African. So our information was passed on again to these Europeans as they came out the hillsides of the Caucasus Mountains and began to become civilized by us.
Okay. Well, I know one thing. We had the first president of the United States. You can't deal with that. I tell you what, we got something.
Right. Well, George Washington was the first president of the United States under what is known as the Constitution for the United States, but there was four constitutions. The first constitution was the Articles of Association, written in 1774. Then you had the Articles of Confederation, written in 1781. Then you had the Declaration of Independence, which was written in 1776. And then you had the Constitution for the United States, written in 1789. So in this regard, you know, and it was ratified in 1791. So in this regard, there's four constitutions. So the question would be, which constitution did George Washington fall up under? That was the one for the United States of America, you know, in which that was 1789 when he got elected in order to become president. However, the Declaration of Independence was written in 1776. And the Articles of Confederation was written 1770 of Association was written 1774. So who was the president for 13 years or more prior to George Washington? And that's when it comes into the problem, Matt, because you will find that under the Articles of Confederation, John Hanson was the first president. All right? Second was, but then you had presidents prior to that who was part of the Continental Congress, who presided over the Continental Congress, coming from out of Pennsylvania, from out of Philadelphia in Pennsylvania, where the first capital actually was located at prior to it being moved to Washington, D.C. You know, so we had actually about 16, and a couple of them actually became president twice, like Peyton Randolph. Peyton Randolph was president twice. He was actually the first president under the Articles of Association. And then he was the third president under the Articles of Association also. So we're talking about 16 people who actually was president prior to George Washington during the Articles of Confederation, the Declaration of Independence, and during the Articles of Association.
Hmm. Okay. Well, all right. Well, then, okay.
And let me say this, and they was Moors.
Oh, now you just done knocked down my little house I was trying to build. What about the Queen of California?
Well, the Queen of California, known as Queen Kali, of course, we know that particular sister, she actually was the woman in which that was head of what now become within history as the Amazons. When we speak about the Amazons, actually it was talking about her particular tribe, the Californium, or the Fonami tribe from out of what you now call California. So actually the word California actually is still an indigenous word or indigenous lineage, you know, with it, you know, indigenous ties. So, you know, dealing with that, she was definitely a powerful sister in which that led her tribe, you know, against invasions, you know, from what we now refer to as the Albion, as well as her descendants, you know, later on against the Albion in order to keep him out. And actually, this is why the Mexicans say to this day that parts of Mexico actually belong to them, and they are right in that extent because the word Mexican is derived from the word Omex or Omexian, all right, in which that's talking about the Omex or the African blacks, you know, who came here over 5,000 years ago. And that was just one of the impacts. We had so-called blacks in which they have come here many times. The Fosums has been here over 75,000 years ago. The Washita has been here over 100,000 years ago. The Twa people, who are known as the Pygmies, have been here over 2 million years ago. And we even have reports coming from the Forbidden Archaeology, The Hidden History of the Human Race by Michael Creedmore, and as well as Richard Thompson, L. Thompson, in which that stated that there was a blast done in Dorchester, Massachusetts, in which that they found vessels or what was like shaped like bells, and at the bottom of it was exquisite carving. So it has a writing system in which that dated back to 600 million years ago. So there was life here before the continental drift, as Prophet Noble Dr. Ali stated, 400 million years before the continental drift, before there was known as the seven continents, as we now refer to them as.
Well, okay. I know I got something now, because I found out that they come out with about the dinosaurs, and they found a dinosaur footprints with man footprints right alongside them.
Right.
Now, as a European, I had to be there. That had to be my footprint. What do you think about that?
Well, there's no doubt. It might be the impression that the European was there, but of course they couldn't have been, because the dinosaurs was eradicated from the planet 65 million years ago through a gigantic asteroid or meteorite shower in which that bombarded the planet Earth, in which that the humans had to go behind waterfalls and go into the Earth, because the Earth is cavern-shaped, honeycomb-like with caverns. And this is a known fact, and this is how we survived. And that was 65 million years ago. And scientists would tell you that today within their science classes, you know, what took place. But we made mention of the fact that humanoids, or we, intelligent beings, was here 600 million years ago. So we're talking about over 500 million years before the dinosaurs was eliminated off the planet. We was already here. And so that footprint in which that was next to the dinosaur had to have been a child's footprint, because during that time period, we was as tall as 36 feet. All right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have to agree with that, especially after examining Wayne Chandler's work.
Right.
But now, I want to get to closer to home, because so far, I lost 12 rounds. Now, I got to come back because Walter Williams said some things. And so certainly, Jesus Christ is what we need to be serving.
Right. Well, we do serve Jesus, the Christ, on a daily basis. Every time you breathe, you're serving Jesus, or his Aramaic Hebrew name, which is Yahshua. Yahshua. The Old Testament deity was known as Yahweh. The New Testament deity was known as Yahshua. That is coming from off the ancient wars of Kemet, or Tamaré, or Egypt, as we refer to it as, in which that speaks about Geb and Nut. Then in the next scene, you see Geb, Nut, and then Shu. Shu is put in between Geb and Nut. That is, Geb and Nut actually is the Yah and the Way in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, Shu is thrown up in the middle and becomes the middle pillar, as within Freemasonry, because we have Jacin and Boaz. And so that becomes that symbol there. And so Shu, which means upright, all right, symbolize, just like within Freemasonry, that you must be raised to a 90-degree perpendicular level, which symbolizes the resurrection, all right, in which that from a horizontal dead state to a live perpendicular state, in which that is vertical. That's what that is all symbolic to. So, yes, Jesus symbolizes the breath of life. And this is why Jesus says that no man can go to the Father, no man can get to the Father but by me. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. Hence the breath of life. Every time you breathe, you're breathing in the Father or God. And so it's through the essence of Shu in which that you breathe in God. And that's how you get to know God, or that's how you become the Christ, or what is known as consciousness, how you go into or become higher consciousness, or what is known as your higher self. That's how you reach your higher self, which is Christ. It's through the science of breath, hence the holy breath, in which that is mentioned within the Holy Quran, Circle 7, second chapter, where it speaks about teach man, talking about the revealers of light. That's what we're supposed to be doing as the revealers of light. We're supposed to teach man that he and Allah are one. Teach man about the science of the holy breath, and that by way of the holy breath will bring peace and harmony. So it is through Christ, through Jesus, in which that we will receive that. A matter of fact, when you sneeze, what is the word in which that you say when you sneeze? Yashu. So you're calling on Jesus every time you say Yashu when you sneeze, which is symbolic to, which is in old Hebrew, which is Aramaic, Yahshua, you know, which means, oh, he who saves. So, or the Lord's salvation. So the Lord's salvation, or he who saves, is the breath of life. You know, but it's not no anthropomorphized character from 2,000 years ago known as Jesus, which is a white man. That didn't happen. That is a mythology in which that they utilized the principles of the sun, astrotheology, in which that the sun was born on December 25th because on December 21st, for 3 days and three nights, the sun is in its lowest state in the sky, which is known as the tomb, in which that on the 25th, he begins to raise up from out of the tomb, resurrected and to ascend to his Father as who art in heaven. Hence, the sun, 9 months later, is born again in the month of September, which is Virgo, born from the Virgin. So hence, the term born again. That is all talking about that particular scenario. So what happened is that in 325 A.D., Constantine and 318 bishops, one was excommunicated by the name of Arian or Arius, in which that was the head of the Coptic or the Ethiopian church at that time, who denied this created creature known as Serapis, in which that he composited and put together during his council. And they had many conferences after that in which that was to solidify that into the Christian belief system known as Catholicism, which is the Catholic Church, which means the universal belief, in which that they understood who Mary actually was. That was all set, Mary, who was the mother of Heru, which hence they turned into Jesus. And hence they dropped the Orset and just left Mary. But Orset's name was called M-E-R-I, in which that became M-A-R-Y. And so Mary become the mother of God within Catholicism. And now that is how it is today. You have to do 100 Hail Marys if you do a particular sin, because she'll forgive you, because that is symbolic to the Holy Spirit, which is within the book of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, known as her, or known as Sophia, wisdom.
Okay,
so if you want wisdom, then you must raise up Sophia, or what is known within Hebrew, the Shekinah, which within the Sanskrit is the Kundalini. And as she raised up from the base of the spine through the 33 vertebrates, hence Jesus died died at the age of 33, on the cross, hence symbolic to the left and the right hemisphere of the brain, as it comes up to the middle portion of the brain, which is the pineal gland, it becomes awakened, and so hence the soul resurrects, because she is merged with Osor, who is also sleep within the pineal, which is your sleeping soul. And from the merger of the Holy Spirit, which is the Shekinah, which is the Kundalini, to Osor, which is the soul, gives birth to Heru, which is the resurrected one, which is your higher self. This is what the teachings of Prophet Noble Jali was teaching us. If you ever read the Holy Quran, Circle 7, that's what it was really talking about. The initiation, those 7 degrees, was symbolic to those 7 chakras, awakening each and every one, just like the Muslims do when they have those 7 positions within Salat, called Barakah, or what is known as, they call it Salat, which means fire. The word Salat means fire within Arabic. So when you make Salat, you're raising your fire. And there's 7 positions known as Rakats. All right? And you're making your Barakah too, Allah. In other words, you doing your blessings to Allah. You bestowing, you're hoping to receive blessings, and you're giving forth praise to Allah. You know, so then you have, when you read the Quran, the first chapter is known as Al-Fatiha, which means the opener, or the opening in this particular sense, and it's derived from the word Ptah. And Ptah was an ancient Egypt, was known as the head deity. He was known as the Netzer of the Netzerus. He was the father of the gods. And hence, this is where we get the word father from also. So hence, when we say our Father who art in heaven, we're talking about Ptah. So, and when you read in the Quran, the opening, which is Al-Fatiha, you know, and you read in those seven stanzas, you know, or those seven ayats, those seven verses, and each one ends with the ayin sound. When you look up on the chart of Arabic, or you look up on the chart of Hebrew, the ayin letter is the 16th and the 18th letter from out of Arabic and Hebrew, and the symbol of ayin is one eye. So then you go to Matthew's, the 6th chapter, the 22nd verse, where it says, if the eye be single, the whole body will be filled with light. So the one eye is single and the whole body filled with light. Well, what is that one eye? It's the pineal gland. Scientists have called it the epiphanous gland, which is this eye, actually, in which that has lenses on it, in which that give you access to the spiritual world. This is what gives you the ability in order to dream and have visions. You know, so when we get into these sciences, we have to be able to go deep into them in order to explain our very existence, because this is talking about the human body and our very existence. This is why you have to be a biologist as well as a psychologist. You have to be a metaphysician as well as an esoteric doctor. You have to be an herbalist, in which that deals with the science of herbology in order to heal the body, as well as a medical physician, you know, in which that deals with being able to set bones and so forth and so on. So we have to be all of these particular things in order to get a clarity on our sciences.
Fantastic. Now, are you familiar with the works of Dr. Horace Butler?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. When the Rocks Cry Out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, what hung me up over there, and I got a caller in the queue. We're going to get to you. Just hold on 1 second. What got me over there is if all the plantologists and herbologists all know this, that the only place on the planet that corn grew was in the Americas.
Right.
But we have a Bible that leads us to believe that everything happened on the North American on the African continent.
Right.
Totally eliminating any information from here.
Well, the Bible is nothing more than a summary of all of our ancient books. You have the Popol Vuh, in which that is a book from out of the Incas, in which that tells of various sciences in which that we have utilized within the Americas to this very day. As a matter of fact, even within the Book of Mormon, written by Joseph Smith, he teach about the ancient sciences of the Native Americans, which hence, or i.e. the Moors. Hence, that's why they named themselves after us as the Mormons. You know, so we know that there's more to the story than what is led, but this is the way in which that they want us to just deal with the story there in Africa, which there's nothing wrong with that story. However, we also have a story here within the Americas. But that was the way in order to steal our land while they came over here, was to hide those particular facts that we was already over here prior to the continental drift. So when all of the continents were together, known as Pangaea, known as Hyperborea, known as Mu or Asia, you know, we were all spread out throughout the diaspora. We was in all of the regions of the planet. We just didn't stay within Africa. We was in Europe. We was in Asia. We was in the Americas, North, South, and Central, and the adjoining islands. So what become known now as the adjoining islands, hence was Atlantis, as well as on the Pacific side was Lemuria or El Lemuria. So we was everywhere, you know, which is now the remnants of the Hawaiian Islands, and which is now also in the Samoan Islands, and which is now also the remnants of the Atlantis or the Atlantic Caribbean Islands, you know, of Atlantis. So we know where we were. We was everywhere. So we have to take all of the portions of our story and mend this puzzle back together again and make it a whole, just like the continents were over 200 million years ago.
Okay. Thank you so much, brother. I'm going to open up this line here and let this new caller in. Area code 808. Could you tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what's your question or comment?
Hey there, this is Deanna. I'm calling from Hawaii, and my question is basically, like, I just recently, not so long ago, read something in the Bible as far as the Moabites not being able to inherit the kingdom of God, or not being able to get to heaven, and I want to know why is that. If the Bible is like a summary of the ancient text, is there anything in ancient text that supports that theory?
Right, because what it's saying is that your flesh cannot inherit the kingdom of God, which is ethereal or astral. So, in other words, you must physically die. It is unto all men to have at least one death. So that's what it's referring to. Moab, as we said it earlier, metaphysically and esoterically means the material plane or materiality. In other words, dealing with the material. In other words, your physical body. So that's what Moab is, your physical body. You know, however. Go ahead. So we know that. We know we can't get into the highest of heavens, even though the earth is one facet of heaven. There's seven heavens, and the earth is one facet of heaven. It's the lowest form of heaven, hence i.e. is also referred to as hell. All right, there's seven heavens going up, which is ascending, and there's seven hells going down, descending. All right, and this is taught within the Holy Quran, as well as also many other books in Jewish law, such as in the Talmud, such as within the ancient Egyptian text known as the Berhem Heru, so coffin text, pyramid text, and etc., as well as also within the Sumerian text known as the Enuma Elish. So we know that there's more than just one heaven. Even the Bible speaks about Paul mentioning at least three heavens, and that a man was caught up into the third heaven. So we know that there's many heavens. You know, so on this plane or on this existence, what is known as hell or heaven, based on your perception, this is the lowest form of it. And since that is the case, then in order to get into the highest forms, you can't take your physical body with you. That's what it's referring to. Because in those highest realms, we know that you don't take your physical body. You know, you take your mind. Your mind journey into the highest forms of heavens when you close your eyes and you go to sleep at night. Why else would, if you would have spent 75 years on this planet, and if you would have spent out of those 24 hours in a day, 8 hours sleep, that means you would have spent 25 years out of the 75 years sleep. Only 50 years you would have been woken with your two eyes here. Your other eye, in which that we spoke about earlier, would have been on another place of existence known as the astral plane or the star plane, hence giving you the ability in order to have dreams. So even after 75 years, you wasn't even woke the whole 75 years here. You was 25 years elsewhere if you got your 8 hours of sleep at night. So, I mean, the whole concept of that, that's what it's referring to. It's something esoteric. It's not something to be taken literally.
Okay.
Did that answer your question, sister?
Yes, sir.
All right. Dr. Arlene Bay.
Yes.
To give us your contact information one more time for the new people that
yes.
come on board.
For those who want to call, ask questions, get more clarity, you can go to our website, www.drlimelbay.com. That's DrAlimElBey.com. That's AlimElBey.com. And you can go there, and it says the metaphysical ending, the metaphysical end of religious confusion. I suggest everyone go and read that blog. I answer every single thing as far as Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, and we explain it to a level in which that is understandable, and plus it's written, so you will be able to go back and read it over and over and over again in order to get clarity. And this goes a little bit deeper than the historic origin of Islam and the historic origin of Christianity written by Walter Williams, because we go into explaining about the names, such as Jesus, such as Christ. The word Christ comes from the word Kras, in which that means the mummified body of Osiris, which is talking about the soul being wrapped in garb, which is talking about inside the pineal gland. We go into Muhammad, in which that symbolized the last seal of the prophets, talking about the crown chakra. And we go into those particular things, is that if they are saying that these so-called men came from Abraham, then we go to Galatians, the 4th chapter, the 22nd through the 26th verse, where it shows you that Abraham, his sons, Isaac, Ishmael, and his wives, Sarah, and Hagar, was all allegory. If you look at the word allegory in Webster's dictionary, it means fictional characters. They not physically exist, but symbolize a spiritual underlying meaning. That's their definition. So when you look at the word allegory, that's what it means. Then you go to the 3rd chapter of Enram within the Holy Quran. It says that portion of this book is decisive and other portions of it is allegorical. And Allah bestows upon those who have knowledge the allegorical parts. But those who choose to not to listen to Allah, they will give those allegorical parts their interpretations in order to confuse man and deceive them.
I know one thing. I got the Ten Commandments.
Right.
Now, certainly we created that.
Oh, well, we did. And that came from the 147 Confessions of Mayat, in which that was 77, in which that became finally 42 virtues, or what is known as the 42 Confessions of Mayat, for the 147 Confessions. But when you talk about the 42, you're talking about the 42 gods or the natural rules in which that over each principle, in which that is what the Ten Commandments were derived from out of ancient Egypt or Tamaray or Tamari, you know, based on Dr. Ben's book, The Black Family of the Nile, or The Black Man of the Family of the Nile, in which that breaks that down, that the oldest name for Egypt was Tamaray or Tamari. So we know that is where that information derived from the Ten Commandments, because they are nearly identical. Where it says that I have not killed, you know, it's right there. Thou shalt not kill. It says thou shalt not kill, but within the laws of Mayat, 42 laws of Mayat, it says I have not killed. So it don't say. It's like in the Old Testament saying, like, thou shalt not, like, God is talking to man. However, in the 42 Confessions of Mayat, it is saying, I have not. So you take the responsibility for your deeds, your actions, your behavior, and you become accountable and responsible. You know, in other words, that is something on which that in the Bible they tell you that Adam wasn't, because Adam placed blame on Eve and told God, well, God, you gave it to me. But yet he ate the fruit from the tree. But he said, but of course, he couldn't do nothing but place blame. Well, she made me do it, and the serpent made her do it. But God, you gave it to me. So this is placing blame, and that's the problem with humanity now. We have a tendency of placing blame instead of being accountable and responsible for our own deeds and actions.
Okay, fantastic. Now, Dr. Aleem, I just came back a couple of weeks ago from down in Key West, and I was 40 miles away from Cuba. I wanted to get on some boats down there and go down in the Atlantic Ocean, because 40 miles off the coast of Florida are pyramids and, in the Atlantic Ocean. And they are the fishermen are telling the story. The United States media is telling them to shut the hell up. And all this is going on down here.
Right.
So I went down there, and I didn't get a chance to get out there in the ocean to go out to actually see that. But I want to find out about the king of Cuba. Could you share any light on that at all?
The king of Cuba, there's a good book in which that deals with that. In which that deals with king of Juba. There's a book in which that was written by the former editor of ancient America, Frank Joseph. He wrote that book called King Juba, in which they, in that book he speaks about our indigenous, I guess you can say, ancestry throughout the Americas and throughout the Caribbean islands, as well as from out of Africa and elsewhere. But he deals more with the American side of things, in which that he speaks about that particular king by the name of King Juba, in which that at one time had massive amounts of gold, you know, in which that, you know, he was speaking about that, and that was supposed to have been like the treasures equivalent or more so than King Solomon. Of course, we know that King Solomon is an allegory, because if Abraham did not physically exist, then neither could David, Solomon, Jesus, nor Muhammad. You know, and this is what Walter Williams is talking about, you know. So therefore, we're dealing with allegories. So this is why you have to decode this, because even in Freemasonry, it tells you that Freemasonry is a system of symbolisms and signs veiled in mysteries of allegory. So we have to explain these allegories for our people. Otherwise, they would be deaf, dumb, and blind still, not knowing what's what, and still believing in white Jesus and believing that he's coming out the sky to save them, even though it's been 13 years too damn late.
Okay. All right. Now, we got areas in the Grand Canyon that sealed off, and this is dangerous, and you could be if you go in there, you could be arrested, you could be imprisoned, and all of that. Why do you think all these barriers are put up in these particular areas?
The reason why is because there was an article in April the 9th, 1910, and 1909, in between those time periods, in which they specifically stated that they found structures within the Grand Canyon dating back to the time of Queen Hatshepsut, as well as also Pharaoh Akhenaten, Unkhaten, basically from out of the time of the 18th dynasty, in which that stated that there was 18 temples there within the Grand Canyon, and that particular one was closed off. That was actually like one of the temples of Ra, and the temple of Isis or Set, in which that was closed off, and they did not want us to go in there. The Smithsonian told the park rangers that to close that area off so that people could not investigate and actually find out what was going on. But of course, they are there, you know, trying to find out what's going on, and of course, they are hiding that information from the public, you know. So that information goes back to the fact that, once again, Egyptians were here in the Americas over what we would refer to now, almost 3,000 to 4,000 years ago.
Okay, now I'm looking in the chat room, and I'm looking at the king in Panama by the name of Bayano. Could you shed some light on that if you know anything about that?
Well, there's been many tribes coming from out of Panama in which that was indigenous. One was called, from out of Panama, they was known as the Albino of Panama. And they was there dating back to over 3,000 years ago, actually. You know, so when you go and do your research, you actually see said black people in the Panama region and area dating back around that time period, and I'm sure further back than that. Of course, you know, we being general with these estimates because these are the time spans in which that the European have given us, and of course we know that more than likely is two to triple to quadruple times further back than that. You know, but this is just what they're being estimate with as far as these particular time spans and dates. And, of course, you can get more information from the Ancient American Magazine, which is a very good text. Also, Atlantis Rising is another good magazine. And you can get these from Barnes & Noble's, you know, from offline. If you go to, you know, go, matter of fact, you can pull up those particular books online and actually order them also.
Okay. Well, I know one thing. The United Nations might have made a mistake because they labeled the people in Louisiana as the oldest people on Earth. Why do you think they put that in writing?
Right. Well, that's because, like we were reading about the word indigenous. matter of fact, when we get to it, let's go to the definition. It says specifically indigenous, and this is based on the Inter-American Declaration. This is right prior to the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, but it's called the Inter-American Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. In the definition, and this was passed September the 18th, 1995, but in the definition of indigenous, it says Article 1 that in this definition, indigenous people are those who embody historical continuity with societies which existed prior to the conquest and settlement of their territories by Europeans. That's one. As well as, this is two, as well as people brought involuntarily to the New World who freed themselves and reestablished the culture from which they have been torn. Okay? So that means those who was brought here from Africa, as well as also those who was already here, are listed as indigenous people, hence still the oldest people on the face of the planet. So they didn't make a mistake at the United Nations saying that the Washita are the oldest people on the planet because they knew that the Washita are so-called black people, they are Moors.
Okay. Well, now, let me ask you this. In your opinion, based on what we know about the richest people on the planet, who do you think was the richest man on Earth?
Well, of course, Africans would be the richest people on the planet if they just learned how to deal outside without the European influence and colonialism and the equipment and technology and begin to start having respect for what they have and of their own resources, you know, as well as also us here in America, you know, the indigenous people here. America is as rich as Africa. As a matter of fact, there were stories of us being more richer here than in Africa. So that means that we have been separated from our resources, you know. So these are things in which that we have to come back into consciousness of. We have to learn how to utilize equipment and start our own digging, our own, you know, our own digs and research and studies, you know, and excavations and so forth and so on, you know. We need to set up schools of anthropology, archaeology, dealing with scientific research and studies, you know, chemistry, biology. We need to take all of these people in which that is actually going into these particular fields, but they're not going to come and work with us if they don't see an economic economic recourse. You know, in other words, they have to have finances in order to provide for themselves and their families. So we have to come up with economic ways in order to do so, so that we can actually begin to do what we need to do for ourselves. This is about self-determination. This is not about depending upon others for our survival and subsistence anymore. Food, clothing, and shelter is something that we should be providing for ourselves.
Okay, fantastic. Dr. Aline Bey and Kadira, I certainly appreciate you all being on the broadcast. We come to the closing moments down here. I only have one more question, and we have 6 minutes and something left. Could you briefly tell us one more time in a little bit more detail, just briefly, what should all Moors in America be doing today for survival?
Number one, they need to be planting, you know, vegetable gardens, fruit orchards, especially if they're outside of the city. They need to go back to farming because we need to be able to provide for ourselves as far as foods. We need to know the science of dowsing so that we can find water sources, which is an ancient practice. We need to be able to do trade and bartering and go outside of this monetary system in which that is set up, in which that has right now rulership over us and over our minds, because we think that if we don't got this green, that we can't survive. So, I mean, these are the things that we need to do for self in order to show nationhood and show togetherness and show some determination.
Okay, fantastic. And give us your contact information one more time.
All right.
This is the last time. I ain't going to mess with you about it. No more.
No, they can contact us at 252-257-3588. That's 252-257-3588. And you can go to our website, in which it has awesome amounts of information on it, www.dralimelbey, that's DralimElbey.com. I am also a Reiki master practitioner, as well as also Tantra Kriya instructor, as well as also we deal with the science of nationalization. We do herbology and health. We also are natural health consultants, so you can also get health consultant information from us, and we can give you the right information in order to heal yourself, as well as also we deal with foods, raw foods, as well as other information. So, I mean, we're doing it all because we're trying to become self-sustainable because this is, once again, part of self-determination.
All right. Thank you very much. I certainly appreciate you being on broadcast.
I appreciate
and,
you inviting me, Brother Taco.
You're welcome. We're going to be calling on you again in the future.
All right. Appreciate that.
Expose more information. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and this information that you heard tonight, tons and tons of this information is in Tahaka's archives. When you ask that, access that, is go to www.tahakaarchives.com, and after you do that, then contact me so I can guide you along and coach you and all this stuff. So you, if you're dealing with your bill collectors, mortgage companies, if your children have school projects and stuff and they're trying to refute the lies that's being perpetrated against them in the American school system, they have a coach, okay? And what we're going to do is we're going on. Don't forget, come tomorrow night, I'll be on the Tony Gill Show, area code 347-884-9485, and you can dial in there and catch me there. Then we got Abundance Child on Monday, Commit to You Bay on Sunday, and then we're going to be dealing with astrology on Tuesday. So you all have a good evening, and I certainly appreciate you all for coming out and listening to the show.